Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It's about that time, the most entertaining hour of your afternoon. Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports live here on WKAR. AM 870, 94.5 FM. Boy, oh boy, do we have a ton to get to. And wow, that's all I can say. Wow. When evaluating what happened last night at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in the national championship between Alabama and Georgia, it was a game that didn't end until midnight. Well, past midnight, I should say. And what an entertaining game it was, folks. Boy, oh boy, Nick Saban now tying the great Bear Bryant for 6 national championships. In my opinion, I think Nick just solidified himself as the greatest college football coach of all time. But we are going to comb through what exactly led to that Alabama victory over Georgia, because there were a lot of things going wrong for Alabama. But there were some great coaching adjustments by Nick Saban that led to the dub. There were some bad coaching decisions on behalf of former Alabama assistant coach Kirby Smart that led to the Alabama dub. But when it mattered most, Nick and the Crimson Tide showed yet again why they are among the elite, or the elite, in the college football world. Wow. So we got a lot of national championship chatter to get to. We invite you to be a part of it. If you would like to give your thoughts on Nick Saban winning his 6th Natty, call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also join us via Facebook.com/Current Sports and check out the live stream. It's up and running right now. You can comment below the video. I see our views are going up as I speak. That's a good thing, right? You can also join us via Twitter. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. We will also talk about a surprising transfer out of the camp of Michigan State football. Did not see this name deciding to chuck up the deuces to Sparty land and take his football talents elsewhere. We'll talk about that. We will also welcome to the show our dear friend, Darren Weiss. We have not talked to Darren in quite some time. Darren is a former student here at Michigan State University. He's a former Current Sports beat reporter, and he is going to tell us how he has shifted his career now into the world of acting out in sunny Los Angeles, California. So that's going to be a pretty cool feature interview. And we'll also have an extended conversation on the worldwide leader, ESPN. I've been meaning to get to this piece for a while now, and I promise I'm going to get to it today, all right? Because it's just an interesting conversation concerning the year 2017 as it pertains to ESPN and where sports media, where sports broadcasting is headed as we now embark on a new year. So a lot to get to. Our plate runneth over. Let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, folks, the legend of a true freshman quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, was cemented over the course of a couple hours late Monday and into early Tuesday morning in Atlanta as number 4 Alabama toppled number 3 Georgia in epic comeback fashion to win the 2018 College Football Playoff National Championship. Tua said the quarterbacks were brought together in the locker room, himself as well as Jalen Hurts, while the Tide trailed 13-0. And they were told that the former 5-star, number 1 ranked signal caller would start the second half under center instead of Hurts. The plan, as Tua shared after the game with ESPN, was to rotate quarterbacks. And then Tua went 3-and-out on his first possession. And then, as Jalen Hurts said on the broadcast, the youngster, quote, stepped in and did his thing. He certainly did. Nick Saban, the legendary coach, has improved to 12-0 against his former assistants. That does include a 2-0 record against Michigan State head football coach Mark D'Antonio. Though, that pales in comparison to an even more impressive record. With his victory Monday night, Saban tied Bear Bryant with his record 6th national championship. We are going to have a ton of chatter centered on last night's national championship game between the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Georgia Bulldogs. I'm curious to get your thoughts. I'm sure many of you walked into work a bit tired this morning, seeing as though you stayed up to watch that greatness last night. I want to get your thoughts. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. All right. Alabama was voted number 1 in the final Associated Press College Football poll rankings, of course, after winning the national championship, beating Georgia. Unbeaten Central Florida finished 6th. So as far as the entire AP Top 25 pans out, Michigan State, which defeated Washington State in the Holiday Bowl to finish 10-3, finishes ranked number 15 in the final AP poll. That's an improvement of 3 spots from the final regular season poll. Now, Washington State was the only team ranked in the final regular season poll to fall out of the top 25 after the bowl season. North Carolina State moved in after beating Arizona State 52-31 in the Sun Bowl and finished number 23. Less than a month after the Michigan State Spartans finished a bounce-back season, again winning the Holiday Bowl and going 10-3, Hunter Rison, a true freshman wide receiver, is the latest Spartan heading to a different program, according to his father, Andre Rison. Now, the announcement was made yesterday afternoon on the Drive with Jack on 92.1 FM in Lansing. The issue, it seems, was a lack of playing time. This is what Andre had to say during that broadcast. Quote, he feels as if he's just as good as the guys that's playing in front of him. With that being said, and how it looks from the rotation, some games he wouldn't even get in the second half. Some games he wouldn't play at all, but a minimum. He's too talented to just waste a freshman year, end quote. Neither Hunter nor Michigan State has commented on Andre Rison's statements. If he were to transfer, the wide receiver would have to either sit out a season or spend a year out of the Division I ranks. So we'll have an extended conversation concerning Hunter Rison. According to his father, Andre, he has decided to transfer to another program. We'll have more on that story in just a moment. Now, following the 2017 season, Michigan State's backup quarterback, Messiah DeWeaver. I love that name, Messiah. You got to be good if you have the name Messiah, right? But Messiah DeWeaver, he has announced that he will be playing football elsewhere in 2018. Many of you Spartan fans know that. Now, the leader of the 2016 recruiting class felt it was a better career move to transfer in order to earn playing time instead of sitting behind Brian Lewerke for the next 2 years. Now, the former Spartan gunslinger, he announced via Twitter that he'd be transferring to one of the most fabulous junior college programs in the nation. And this is a program that actually is featured on the Netflix documentary, one of my favorite documentaries out there, Last Chance U. That being East Mississippi Community College. Again, that team is featured on Last Chance U for the last 2 years. The program, led by fiery head coach, and that may even be an understatement, Buddy Stevens, has been a national power at the JUCO level, but it has been knocked for fielding players who have had trouble at the FBS level. Now, it's called Last Chance U because many of the players go there as a last resort after getting in trouble or kicked off of teams. But DeWeaver does not have an off-the-field issue. He's going there to contend for a national title and gain some recognition from another major program. So we wish Messiah DeWeaver luck in that endeavor. Michigan made another coaching hire official on Monday, announcing the addition of Dan Enos to the program. That's right, Enos will join Jim Harbaugh's coaching staff in an undetermined offensive role. The school announced that in a press release. The hire was originally reported by Sports Illustrated on Friday. Now, he comes to Michigan after three seasons as an offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach at Arkansas. There, the Razorbacks threw for more than 3,000 yards and rushed for more than 1,300 in two of the three seasons Enos was in charge. But it also regressed each year under Enos as well, with Arkansas turning in a 4-8 record in 2017 that resulted in the firing of head coach Brett Bielema and his staff. Now, prior to his stint in Arkansas, Enos served as head coach at CMU, Central Michigan University, where he turned in a 26-36 overall record. He was 20-18 over his final three seasons, including two bowl appearances before departing for Arkansas. And as many of you Michigan State football fans know, Mr. Dan Enos is a Michigan State alum. That's going to be a bit weird, seeing Dan Enos rock the maize and blue on the sideline, knowing that he has green running through his veins. All right, moving on. The Detroit Lions will not only be hiring a new head coach in the coming weeks, but also finding a new D coordinator. The Cincinnati Bengals have hired Terrell Austin as its new defensive coordinator, a position recently vacated by Paul Guthrie. Austin interviewed with the Bengals last week. Now, according to the NFL Network, the Oakland Raiders also made a late push to hire Austin, offering a job coaching the team's defensive backs with the added title of assistant head coach. Now, Austin spent four seasons with the Lions. His most successful season was his first, taking a defense headed by Ndamukong Suh and DeAndre Levy and parlaying that star power into one of the NFL's most dominating units. That success earned Austin head coaching buzz, and he's interviewed for a number of positions over the past 3 years, including the Lions' current head coaching position. In a game that proved to be equally as dramatic and exciting as the college football national championship game, all right, let's be real, it wasn't that exciting in comparison to the national championship game, but it was pretty entertaining, all right? The New Orleans Pelicans held on for dear life against the Detroit Pistons in a 112-109 win on Monday night. For the Pels, last night's game was a tale of two big performances by two very big men. Anthony Davis got the action going early and often, as he so regularly does against the Pistons. He had 30 points and 10 boards through three quarters. Davis wouldn't finish the game, however, leaving the game due to a sprained right ankle. Health has been the big issue as it pertains to AD. Now, Andre Drummond's status for the game was questionable after missing Detroit's previous game in Houston with a rib contusion, but he played and posted a typical line, 16 points, 14 boards. Former Pelican and forever fan favorite Ish Smith had 16 points, 6 boards, 4 assists. The tandem of Tobias Harris and Avery Bradley gave New Orleans fits as the pair combined for, get this, 49 points and 10 assists, also 8 boards. The Pistons will take on the Brooklyn Nets tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. You can catch that one on Fox Sports Detroit. And last but not least, this is pretty exciting for all of you Michigan golf fans out there. Top Golf has broken ground on its first venue here in the great state of Michigan. Top Golf allows people to enjoy point scoring golf games using microchip balls that score themselves, showing players the accuracy and distance of their shots instantly on a TV screen in their hitting bay. Now, the venue also features plenty of food, drinks, big screen TVs, and music in climate-controlled hitting bays for year-round fun. The 65,000-square-foot golf destination is scheduled to open next winter in 2018 in Auburn Hills at the corner of I-75 and Jocelyn Road near Great Lakes Crossing Mall Outlets. You can see pictures from inside a recently opened venue in New Jersey in multiple photo galleries. And I actually, Ian, I got a chance to check out Top Golf around this time last year, actually February of last year, and it's amazing. Have you been to Top Golf? I'm curious.
I have not, but I have a lot of buddies who have gone to Top Golf or have gone to like those, you know, simulations with the projector as well.
Right.
So I've been looking for somewhere to get into that, but I mean, up until now, there really hasn't been a good place like Top Golf. So this is exciting.
I tell you what, wait until you go, dude. It's amazing. It is. I can't even really put it into words. It's like, all right, when you go bowling, right, you got your alley. Cool. You know, you get food, drinks and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But imagine that, you know, the alleys, but at a driving range with couches and TVs and golf clubs. It is
unbelievable stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. And I think that's much needed for Auburn Hills, who just recently lost to Palace, of course, as the Pistons move now downtown to Little Caesars Arena. All right, well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's keep this train a-moving. Time to talk about the national championship game between Alabama and Georgia from last night. What a game. If you're like me, I have been drinking coffee since about, what, like 7 a.m.? I'm all jacked up. What's that old saying from that one movie, Ian? I'm all jacked up on Mountain Dew. I'm all jacked up on caffeine.
Oh, yeah, that's the famous Ricky Bobby quote.
Exactly. Ricky Bobby, Talladega Nights, right? Yeah. Well, I'm all jacked up on coffee because it was a long night. As many of you know, the national championship game, you just heard the call from Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit on ESPN. Just an amazing game. Entertaining game. And for anybody out there who watched that performance by Nick Saban in Alabama and sit back and says that Alabama didn't deserve to be in the national championship because they didn't win the SEC conference title, I hope that chatter from that mouth dies down a bit. Because anybody who watched that game last night, and when you evaluate the different components of that game, which led to Alabama winning the national championship yet again for the sixth time under the leadership of Nick Saban, it is, you can't argue. You know, I was going to say it's hard to argue, but you can't. You just can't argue that Alabama is not the best college football program in the nation and has been for a while now. Nick Saban, in my opinion, just solidified himself as the greatest college football coach of all time. He ties Bear Bryant, as I mentioned in our headliners. And when looking at that game last night, you know, because I sat up, man, I didn't go to bed until probably like 3 a.m. because I sat up and watched, you know, SVP Scott Van Pelt SportsCenter as they had extended coverage after the game, of course. And they talk with Nick. They talk with Tua Tagovailoa, who was unbelievable in that game. And he just earned a huge fan when watching his performance last night and his humbleness after the game. When you look at all of the adversity that Nick Saban had to overcome in that game. Now, granted, you have to admit, did Georgia shoot itself in the foot multiple times? Yeah, without a doubt. Kirby Smart got way too conservative, especially after Alabama tied the game. Kirby Smart, what does Kirby Smart and the offense do? They run out of the Wildcat formation two of three plays that led to a three and out that went absolutely nowhere. Two of three plays came out of the Wildcat format, and then I don't even know what the third play was. It was just nonsensical. And they give the ball right back to Alabama with a chance to take the lead. But you look at the adversity that Alabama had to overcome. They lost a left tackle in this game. They had a player collapse on the sidelines. Did you see that drama? It was like a movie watching that game last night. I mean, I can only imagine what emotionally that does to a team on college football's grandest stage when a player, when a teammate of yours collapses and it has to be, you know, put on a stretcher. That was craziness. Also, you had Brown, who instantly became famous on social media for just his tirade on the sidelines after punching, and he should have been thrown out the game. The referees made numerous blunders in this game, and that was one of them. When Brown took that swipe at the helmet of a Georgia Bulldog player, he should have been thrown out the game then and there. But not only that, I mean, Brown goes to the sidelines. He's getting a tongue lashing, as he should have, from Nick Saban. Then he gets even angrier and starts to get into it with his teammates. And then he tries to, like, shove. I don't know if he was trying to shove one of the assistant coaches or if he was trying to shove one of his teammates. But thank goodness one of his teammates was there to hold him back and just kind of tackle him and put him on the back of the bus, so to speak, and calm him down. I couldn't believe that. So you have some player drama on the sidelines. You have not one, but two missed chip shots from your kicker. The game should have been over in regulation. I couldn't believe that Alabama's kicker turned out that kind of a weak performance, and you could just tell the atmosphere I felt like was getting to him. So you have that going on. Your kicker's not playing well. And then you talk about the atmosphere being in Atlanta, Georgia, at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, where the fan base was, what, like 70-30 Georgia fans? Hostile environment. And, oh, yeah, the QB controversy when it comes to Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa, the young stud from Hawaii, who, by the way, zero. That's the amount of times that Tua Tagovailoa had entered the game this season when Alabama wasn't ahead by double digits before Monday night. No experience whatsoever. And this is why I say, you look at all of that adversity. Left tackle out, player collapses. You got a player, a knucklehead player on the sidelines causing drama and fighting with his teammates. You got two missed field goals from your kicker. You're in an environment where it's mostly Georgia fans. And now you have QB troubles, a QB controversy with Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa. And you decide to put your trust in Tua, who had no previous starts, barely any experience. You make a move like that, and you take out Jalen Hurts, who has led your Alabama football program to this moment, who has been the guy behind center playing the most important position in all of football. And you say, you're not playing well. We're going to bench you coming out of halftime. There aren't a lot of coaches that would have made that move. There are not a lot of coaches that would have made that move, folks, to put in a young pup like Tua, who is still wet behind the ears. That was amazing. And this is why I say this may have been, in my eyes, watching Nick do his thing, this was the greatest coaching job he's ever done. On this kind of stage, dealing with that amount of adversity. And, oh, by the way, you know, this is an Alabama team that just snuck in to the college football playoff. There are many of you out there that still argue that Alabama should not have been in the big dance. And to you, frankly, I say you're crazy. Because I don't know how you can watch that performance last night and say they didn't belong there. They prove they belong there. Nick Saban constantly proves that he belongs there. And he showed why he is the best coach in college football with the adjustments that he made last night. There are numerous components to what make up a legendary coach, right? What make up a great coach? You got to be able to recruit, right? You got to have a great game plan, but how you adjust. Those are the three pillars to me. Those are the three pillars that you stand on if you want to call yourself one of the best in the business when you put on that headset. And Nick Saban put them all on display last night. Absolutely fantastic. And what makes it even more crazy is that, you know, you look at Tua Tagovailoa, destiny. I'm a big believer in destiny. We are all put on this earth for a reason. Everything that happens in our lives have been previously planned out by the man above. Things happen for a reason, okay? And when you look at how the dominoes fell to put Tua in this position, I mean, Tua is from Hawaii. The only reason that he came to Alabama, not just because he loved the program and he wanted to play for Nick Saban, but prior to that, if you remember, Jake Fromm, quarterback for Georgia, freshman quarterback, true freshman quarterback for Georgia, Jake Fromm, he was committed at first to play at Alabama. Tua looked at that and said, there goes my shot. I think I'm going to go somewhere else. Jake Fromm is going to come there next year. But then what happens? Fromm changes his commitment, decides to go to Georgia instead, and then Tua says, oh, all right, I'm going to take my talents to Alabama then. How crazy is that? Goes to Alabama, moves his family from Hawaii to Alabama, and then you have this moment on college football's grandest stage. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. There have only been three teams that have overcome a 13-point deficit in a BCS or college football playoff championship game and won. Florida State was down 18 points in 2014 in the BCS championship game against Auburn. Clemson, behind by 14 points against Alabama in the 2017 College Football National Championship game. That's still fresh in the minds of many, I'm sure. And Alabama behind 13 points last night. Absolutely remarkable. 19-3. That was the margin Alabama outscored Georgia in the final 21 minutes of regulation and overtime. 21-12. That's Nick Saban's record against opponents in the top five of the Associated Press poll. 25, that's the amount of rushing yards by Georgia leading rusher Nick Chubb, a season low. I must say, Sonny Michel did hold down the fort for Georgia in light of the mediocre performance from Chubb, but it still wasn't enough. But there are so many things that were going wrong for Alabama. But Nick Saban, when he saw the water entering the boat, he found a way to plug the holes and pull out the win. That's the testament to a great coach. On the flip side, and now if you look at it, there are, six now assistants of Nick Saban that have not beaten him in a head-to-head matchup after those assistants have become a head coach elsewhere. That is amazing. Amazing. I don't know how Nick Saban has done that because, heck, you got these assistants who you have bred, who have come through your program, you've given them the secret sauce, and yet they still can't figure it out. Kirby Smart was close, though, wasn't he? Kirby Smart was so close. At halftime, I'm sitting there saying, oh, boy, I chose the wrong team. Never doubt Nick Saban. But, again, Georgia got so conservative. You know, there's a thing in sports called, you know, and I love this saying because you see it so many times in the world of sports. You know, a lot of teams, when they get that early lead or they have a lead in the game and there's some time left, you know, they get kind of comfortable and they just say, if I can just wait out this storm, if I can just wait this out, it's going to lead to a win. You start playing not to lose instead of playing to win. And that usually leads to a loss, like we saw last night from Kirby Smart. I just didn't understand it. And Jake Fromm was playing very well, slinging it around the field, a great balanced attack. And then all of a sudden, Kirby said, all right, we got the lead. We don't need to do anything else. Let's just run the ball and just trust our defense. That was good when you had Jalen Hurts in the game because Jalen just didn't have any rhythm. He was very inaccurate. How about the overthrow early in the game when the corner falls down? And I believe he had Ridley in the back right of the end zone, overthrows him, just not real accurate. Jalen Hurts doesn't have as big of an arm as Tua Tagovailoa. Jalen just couldn't do anything. Then they put in Tua, and the offense immediately clicks. He was the spark plug that his team needed in that moment. And what I particularly loved, you talk about character, the character of young men. We saw bad character when it came to Brown last night, right? And his tirade on the sidelines. But you talk about the character of a Jalen Hurts. A player who very well could have been angry and salty and could have thrown his own temper tantrum after being benched after the first half performance that he had in light of the true freshman, Tua. But he didn't. As Tua began to orchestrate that offense down the field, as Tua began to sling it down to receivers, to pick up tough yards like a running back, as he began to command that offense and orchestrate that Crimson Tide comeback, what did Hurts do? He was supportive. He was energetic in the face of Tua, congratulating him, speaking words of encouragement. I love that. You talk about character. And he was interviewed by multiple media outlets after the game, and he gave nothing but praise to Tua Tagovailoa. Amazing. And it was an amazing night. That is how you cap off the college football season and Nick Saban. I mean, what more can you say about him? Love him or hate him? I know many of you out there here in Sparty Land, here at Michigan State University, here in East Lansing, are not too fond of Nick. Many are still holding on to the past and saying that you didn't like how Nick left the Michigan State football program. Nick is too hard-nosed. He's too full of himself. I don't like his attitude. You can have that opinion all you want. But what we saw last night was pure greatness. I don't care where you fall on that side of the fence when it comes to your opinion of Nick Saban. You can't argue that what we saw is why Nick Saban is in the conversation of the best college football coach to ever do it. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I want to hit our first break right now. I know that we have both of our phone lines occupied. We still have a guest to get to on today's current sports. Austin Michael, stay on. Many of you weighing via social media at facebook.com/currentsports. Going to take your comments and calls and get to our guest in just a moment. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we've got a lot more fun here on Current Sports in store for all of you out there. Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You are listening to Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Tuesday, January 9th, 2018. We are talking about the aftermath of the Alabama and Georgia College Football National Championship game. We are dissecting what led to the Crimson Tide win as Nick Saban now picks up his sixth national championship. Pretty impressive stuff. We've got our phone lines lighting up right now. I want to go to line one right now. We've got my man Austin on line one, and Austin and I, we were texting back and forth during last night's insane in the membrane Georgia and Alabama duel. Austin, did you get some sleep at all last night?
I did, man. I woke up a little later than I wanted to. You know, I was supposed to wake up and do my workouts, but I didn't do it. Thanks to you and Alabama and Georgia keeping me up all night.
Right.
Yeah. So I got a couple things. Want to hit you with a couple quotes from the game yesterday. First thing is, theme for yesterday was the fall of the upperclassmen. If you look at it, Chubb had a bad game. Yarbrough had a bad game. Jalen Hurts had a bad game. The lower classmen, man, they bought out yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
My second quote, to the state of Georgia,
oh, man.
All sports teams, yeah. No lead is secure. You have to play to win the day.
Right.
And they failed to do that. And then my last point is, how fitting is it that at halftime, Kendrick Lamar performed Be Humble, Sit Down, and then Jalen Hurts got benched in the second half, sat down, and he was humble. How ironic is that, Al?
That's good. I didn't think about that, Austin. That is so funny. Yeah, that is exactly what happened to Jalen Hurts. He got a bit humbled, you know, after halftime, after having that poor performance in the first half. And you know what? Just really briefly, I do want to talk about the halftime show because I was a bit perturbed, putting it nicely, that Kendrick Lamar did not perform inside.
Oh, I was pissed about it, man.
Yeah, I didn't understand that because, you know, we basically saw, we've seen some great, that's the thing about Kendrick, he always brings it when he performs, but last night it was just kind of a typical rap performance where you just got one guy with a mic walking around, right? Not really entertaining when it comes to the viewer, unless you're a diehard fan of that artist, like I am, and you are too as well. But we've seen Kendrick on SNL have a live band and, you know, dance a bit. You know, we've seen him just have these remarkable performances. The one on Stephen Colbert, we had a crazy band, you know, during that night. He had Terrence Martin on the sax. I mean, Kendrick is always creative when it comes to his performances. But when you're outside in 30-degree weather, it kind of hinders that, man.
And
I don't understand it. And you know what? And I saw a few comments when I put it on my Facebook page. I was a bit displeased about it, of course, and I voiced that on my Facebook page. And a lot of people were telling me that the bands of both schools performed at halftime. That's why they put Kendrick outside. That's not an excuse. Why not have Kendrick collab with those bands?
Exactly.
It don't make any sense. That's just an excuse. Yeah. So I don't know.
I think a lot of it has something to do with who was in attendance at the national championship game, and they were afraid that Kendrick Lamar was going to perform one of his activist songs, if you will.
Yeah, and that crossed my mind as well. Austin always bringing the heat. Appreciate the call, my man. Great stuff.
Yes, sir. Yeah, have a good one, Al.
All right, let's go to Mike from Saginaw on line two. Mike, what's up, man?
What up, man? Did you know Grambling and Georgia got the same letters on their football helmets, and Grambling lost in that stadium, too, in the Celebration Bowl, man. I thought I'd just bring that up.
That's interesting. But I didn't know that.
Yeah, I thought I'd just bring that up. But is the coaching now, it's just they use the pass to set up the run now, because I'm noticing how Georgia did have the better running backs. But I noticed that a lot of the coaches are really passing the ball. It's just like the three-point in basketball. Years ago, coaches wouldn't shoot the three-point. Now everybody is using the three-pointer. Do you think the play calling has a lot to do with it, or it's just
the play calling was in part the reason why Georgia lost that game, and they stopped going to what was working in that game. If you remember, the first seven or eight plays for Georgia were through the air, not on the ground, because they were having success against that Alabama secondary. They totally went away from that when they got the lead. Kirby Smart, you know, the play calling became way too conservative. Just put it on the ground, trust the defense, you know, go three and out, kick the ball back to Alabama, and just hold on tight. That is not winning football, especially in the national championship. So the play calling hurt Georgia for sure.
Do you think that the coaches have to go through their progressions before they make a game plan, and they're going to stick going?
No, Kirby had a clear game plan. He wanted to test the waters early to see if he could move the air with Jake Fromm's arm early on. If he did see a few holes to do that, cool. He was going to primarily pass the ball and mix in a few runs. And by the way, Sony Michel, he had some great runs on the ground, and they had a great balanced attack going. It was more so air heavy. That's something that is unusual when discussing the Georgia offense, but it was working. He totally went away from that game plan in the second half, and that bit him, Mike, for sure.
Hey, let me comment on this before you get to the other callers, man. You know that football stadium in Atlanta is the most beautiful stadium I ever seen on television.
It's beautiful. It is. It really is.
Beautiful, man. So go on ahead and enjoy it. Get the rest of your callers on, and thanks for taking the call.
My man Mike from Saginaw, thank you so much. And, yeah, I actually got a chance. I did a workshop with the National Radio Show Conference. This was like, I want to say about 3 years ago down in Atlanta.
and our dear friend of the show, Jeff Gintner, who is the vice president of Fox Sports South in Atlanta. I linked up with Jeff, and we actually took a tour downtown Atlanta, and we drove by Mercedes-Benz Stadium when it was under construction, and he warned me. He said, Al, this is going to be the most beautiful sporting venue in all of the nation. And to see the final product on television last night, I can only imagine what it looks like in person. But man, oh man, is it pretty nice. I think it goes, well, I'm a Cowboys fan, so I can't say that. But I tell you what, you got Jerry World, you got AT&T Stadium, you got Mercedes-Benz Stadium. They are both B-E-A-utiful. All right, well, let's get to our guest for today's current sports. My man, Darren Weiss, former MSU sports journalism student and current sports beat reporter. And, you know, I wanted to have Darren on because he's got a really cool story. I love diverting a bit from, you know, typical sports talk. And I love following a lot of our guests who have been like family on the show as they venture off into the world, you know, and start playing the game of life, because you just never know where life is going to lead you. And Darren has quite the testimony to that. He is now chasing acting in Los Angeles, California, and I'm excited to catch up with Darren right now. Darren Weiss, how you doing, my man?
Al Martin, how you doing, brother? Thanks for having me on.
Always good chatting with you. And Darren, first off, for our listeners, you know, who may be new and didn't get a chance to hear your voice and read your work when you were a reporter for us here at WKAR, can you just kind of talk about your background here at Michigan State University, kind of the things that you partook in the sports world, and how in the world did you transition into acting on the West Coast?
Yeah, absolutely. So I came in Michigan State 2012. I declared my major the next year, sports journalism. I ended up working as an internship under you, Al, my junior year. I was on the show a couple times. I helped you prep, and I became a reporter that semester, covered different sports. And I was also a member of the Michigan State women's basketball scout team for two seasons. And I think you had me and a few of the girls on a couple times when we talked about that. So that was a really cool experience to be a part of that. And while I was at Michigan State, I needed some elective credits, and acting had always, you know, sparked an interest of mine, and I said, what the heck, why not? And I ended up taking some acting classes and as electives, and I just had a really good time with it and sort of fell in love with it by accident.
Wow, that's pretty crazy stuff. So when did the moment hit you, like, all right, I really want to actively pursue this, you know? And you talk, I hear all these stories all the time when it comes to starving actors, right, where you're trying to get that big break. You're trying to get that big role. You don't know how you're going to pay the rent, but you're out there just chasing your dream because you're young and you got this big dream and nobody's going to tell you what to do. When did the moment hit you to say, all right, I'm going to pack up all my things, go to L.A. and really pursue this thing?
Yeah, so it's interesting, and especially in the entertainment business and acting, nobody really has the same story of how they made it or how they became to be. Everyone sort of has a different way of getting to where they are. So my senior year of college, I was in a 400 level theater class, and Mark Colson, my professor, you know, for our final, instead of performing a scene or writing a paper, he said, all right, you got to go to this audition off campus. And I sort of asked him, I said, you know, Professor Colson, I'm not really interested. I just like taking the classes with you, and I'm having a good time until I graduate. Can I just write a paper? And he's like, no, why don't you just go to the audition? So long story short, I went to the audition for this short film. It was actually made by a former Michigan State student who is now out here in LA. And, you know, I sort of walked in. He gave me the sides, the script to what he wanted me to say in the audition. And I asked one of the other guys in the audition room, I said, hey, do you want to run lines? And he sort of said, no, I gotta do my routine. And that's when it sort of hit me that okay, like, these guys are really taking this seriously, and I'm just sort of here because I have to be here. So, you know, while all these other people were prepping, I just said, all right, I'm ready to go. I looked at the script a couple times. I walked in there. I did the audition. You know, I wanted to go to the bar that night, so I just tried to get out of there as quick as possible. And the next day, I wasn't expecting anything of it. The director called me and was like, hey, we like you for the role. Do you want to do it? And I said, yeah, absolutely. So we shot the short film for about 3 weeks. I had a great time. I loved every second. I woke up every morning and looked forward to working on set and making this short film. And that's when it hit me, like, you know what, this is really what I like to do right now. So let's run with it.
Wow, that is an amazing story, Darren. And you know, life is so funny sometimes. I mean, you could be going in one lane, right, and thinking, okay, this is my lane, but you just never know what opportunities are going to come your way, and then those opportunities lead to an entirely different lane, right? So what was the name? I'm curious to know. I mean, what was the name of that film, and how did it do? Because I'm not too familiar with how, you know, short films and how feature films get to production, and how do you measure success when it comes to those films?
Yeah, so it's you know, this was sort of a student film, and it was for a class, and, you know, we tried to get it out to a couple film festivals in the area. I don't think it ended up going anywhere, but it was just the experience and everything that went behind it that really sparked my interest. And from there, I said, you know, I looked at different schools out west, sort of like a grad school, and I found this conservatory in Santa Monica, California, and I auditioned and I got in, and you know, I've been out here a little over a year. My first big thing, I got casted in a play, and then from the play, I actually was on a soap opera. I was on The Young and Restless. I don't know if anyone still watches soap operas. You know, it's funny. I got an email from the director of Young and Restless. I had never heard of the show, and the subject matter was The Young and Restless, and I thought the director was describing my characteristics, and I'm like, oh, that's so nice of you. You've never even met me, and you already described me. That's great. And I found out that's the name of the show, and I did that, and from there, I landed my first, I guess, big role. I got a supporting role on this upcoming feature film called Bad Impulse. Mm-hmm. We just finished wrapping on Sunday. We filmed for about 6 weeks, and I play a high school senior, and it should be out in about a couple months, maybe at the end of summer. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I learned so much being on set and, you know, long hours, 12-hour days and everything that goes into it and all the prepping. And I just had such a blast. And hopefully it's the first of many, or, you know.
That is amazing, Darren. And you talk about, you know, being on set for 12-hour days and, you know, everything that you've learned during this process. I mean, what is the prep like, you know, when you talk about having a role in a feature film? And I assume, you know, with it being a feature film, that'll be in theaters then, right, Darren?
Yeah, so this is an independent film, so it wasn't picked up by a studio. So it's going to be in some theaters. We'll see how many it gets to, but it will definitely be in theaters. I don't know about every theater in America, but the plan is that it'll be in theaters and it'll go to Cannes Film Festival in France, and we'll see what marketing and what platform it gets out to, but all signs say that it will be out in at least some theaters. And, you know, it's nothing like I've ever experienced. You know, I got the script, and the director, you know, she called me and said, okay, before we start filming, I want you to come to this location. We're going to rehearse these scenes with your scene partners. I want to direct you on that. And I expect you to have all the lines memorized by then, you know. And then when I went to the rehearsal, I met with the costume designer who sort of told me what I was going to wear each day. She had different clothes for me. Mm-hmm. When I got to set, they had a trailer for me where I could just sort of prep my lines and get ready to go and get that switch on and get in the mindset. And, you know, one scene could take 4 or 5 hours to film because I got to get so many different angles. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of you really got to understand how to make do of time, because a lot of the time you're sort of sitting around waiting for the crew to set up. You know, you're filming you're filming a 30-second scene, and then they got to, you know, flip it around. So No, it was great, and it was a big learning experience, and it was just such a blast, Phil.
So that sounds like a lot of repetition. I mean, if you're you know, talk about one scene taking, you know, hours, you know, and they have to get all these different angles. That's a lot of doing the same thing over and over and over, right?
Yeah. I remember the first day I was on set, there was a fighting scene, and a few of the actors, you had to hit like the guy in the same spot, and he had to fall in the same spot, and That scene alone, it was maybe a 2-minute scene. It took 4 or 5 hours because we could not hit our spots. Like, you know, the kid that was getting beat up, he kept falling differently every time. Or, you know, somebody maybe threw a punch with his left hand instead of his right hand. So it had to be so so specific each time, and they had to get four or five angles, and that was really crazy. And it's really, the director is so just, she was a perfectionist, and I love that. And it really made you admire, you know, that you demanded perfection.
Darren Weiss, former Michigan State University sports journalism student and current sports beat reporter and intern, now actor in Los Angeles, California. We're short on time right now, Darren, but I do want to ask you two questions here. The first one, the parallels between acting in sports, because, again, you were a member. You weren't just reporting, but you were a member of Susie Merchant's Michigan State women's basketball scout team and going against Tori Jankowska and Brandi Agee on a regular basis. You're an athlete yourself.
Ariel Powers,
exactly, right, who's doing her thing at the next level in the pros now. Darren, what are the parallels between acting and performing and the world of sports in which you embarked in at the time?
Yeah, so there's a lot more similarities than one would think. You know, obviously, it's just like, you know, you got to practice. You got to go to practice and learn these plays, and it's sort of, it's the same thing with acting. You got to practice these lines before you go, you know, before you film, because if you go in, you know, cold, then you know you're gonna mess up, and it's gonna affect other people. And that's one thing that I never, you know, I wanted to be as less of a problem as possible, just like in Susie Merchant's practice. Like I never, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm a scout member. I don't ever want to be singled out because I couldn't remember a player. I wasn't doing the right thing. So you got to really over prepare and be on the same page with everyone, because, you know, like basketball, it's a team sport. Acting, you know, doing these scenes, it's just not you. There's four or five other people, so that's sort of your team. You got to have the right chemistry and know that everyone's on the same page.
Are you still close with the Michigan State women's basketball team, Darren? Do you still keep in touch with Susie or maybe some of the players that played here while you were here as a student?
You know, it's funny you ask that. I over Thanksgiving, I went back up to see everybody. And Coach Mox, you know, I was in the office, and she's like, "Did you bring your shoes today?" And I go, "A matter of fact, I did." And she's like, "Well, you ready to practice? You ready to go?" And I thought she was kidding. I'm like, "Are you serious?" She's like, "Yeah." And I got to practice, and it was great. I was a little rusty, but it was great to be back out there. I talk to Ariel about every week to 10 days. She's in Turkey right now. The time difference is tough. Mm-hmm. I talk to Jasmine Hines, who's back working with the team probably once a week. She's a really close friend of mine.
Right.
I talk to Brandi a little bit. You know, I talk to some of you. You know, I talk to Nia, who's currently on the team. I love Shay. So, yeah, I still keep in touch with a lot of them, and I still check the scores every night because, you know, from when I was a member of the team, there's still about 50 or 60% of the players are still there. So it's great to see that. You know, they're having a good season, and I love to just watch them and see them succeed. And my brother's on the scout team now, so I'm sort of keeping tabs through him.
Oh, that's great stuff. So you're still very close to the program. Well, I tell you what, Darren, we may have to get you back on to kind of break down what you're seeing so far with Susie Merchant squad. How's that sound, my man?
Oh, I would love to do it, Al, anytime.
All right, my man Darren Weiss, former Michigan State University sports journalism student and current sports beat reporter, now actor in L.A. Darren, how can people follow your journey, dude, and follow the production of your films that you're working on, maybe some plays that you got on the docket coming up? How can people just follow what you're doing out there on the West Coast?
Yeah, absolutely. So I post a lot on my Instagram page. It's my name, Darren Weiss, DarrenWeiss, the number 8. You know, I post a lot of stories about when I'm on set or if I land, you know, what I'm currently working on or whatnot. And I think that's sort of how you saw, Al, is I posted a picture about the role that I landed. And
yeah.
And you reached out and congratulated me, and I appreciated that. And, yeah, just social media, it's a beautiful platform. And, you know, if you use it the right way, it's a good way for people that aren't close to you to still, you know, follow you or see what you're doing.
Without a doubt, man. And a lot of people don't know this, but I've always had kind of a hidden interest when it comes to the acting world. I may be picking your brain very soon, Darren.
I would love for that, man. Get out here. I want to take you to a couple of my classes.
Oh, that'd be awesome, dude. My man, Darren Weiss. Darren, I'm wishing you luck, my man. Much peace and blessings to you. All right, stay in touch.
Thanks, Al. Thanks for having me on.
You got it, my friend. All right. Well, Ian, do we have time for a second break? Real quick.
We might be able to squeeze one in if you want.
Let's hit it right now. I won't even... Second break. Here we go. We'll come right back. You are listening to Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We have 3 minutes left in the show. Engineer Ian Hawley with the great music choice there, the Laffy Taffy. I have not heard that since I was, like, in high school.
That's one of my favorite songs, man.
It's so catchy. It did get annoying because every radio station in America began to play it over and over and over. But, Ian, we have not heard from you all hour, my man. I do, as we close out the show here, and I promised we were going to get to that ESPN piece. I'm going to have to push it again to tomorrow because it runs like 3 minutes, right? So I got to push it again. I'm so sorry, Current Sports listeners. We're going to get to that. Everything got pushed up a bit due to the national championship talk and our callers and Darren as well. So we'll get to that tomorrow. We'll get to it. Also, I'm going to elaborate on the whole Hunter Rison leaving Michigan State as well. And I think that conversation has a lot of parallels to millennials today. All right, I'll get to that in tomorrow's show. But Ian, your thoughts on the national championship, my man?
It was reminiscent of the 2012 national championship when Alabama played LSU and held them scoreless, and I think they didn't even cross half field. At least the first half of this game felt that way. It looked like Alabama was finally on their way to a crushing defeat, much to the pleasure of myself and a lot of other viewers, but they turned it around. I mean, you got to give them a lot of credit from the coaching staff making the changes that they made and the ability of some very young players to go out and execute on the biggest stage.
Certainly, and you know, you saw Nick Saban on the sidelines, and I tell you what, he's got that ferocity of a Tom Izzo, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
When things are going wrong, he will give it to his coaches, he will give it to his players. And the reason why I say this, in my opinion, is the greatest coaching job that Nick has done throughout his career is because, first off, Alabama snuck into the playoff, snuck in, quote-unquote, with that fourth spot. The injuries that they had near the end of the year on the defense, many people questioned the defensive line. They were so beaten up. Nick Saban studied the ship and still was able to find a way. Quite remarkable. Tune into tomorrow's Current Sports. You don't want to miss it. We'll welcome Zach Berridge of WILX TV 10 to break down what's new and what's happening in the world of local girls and boys high school hoops. You don't want to miss that. We'll talk about Hunter Rison deciding to leave Michigan State University and so much more. But in the meantime, much thanks to Darren Weiss, much thanks to Ian Hawley, and all of you out there for tuning in to another edition of Current Sports. I'm Al Martin. Be easy, people.